If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
You're listening to Steve Bertrand on Books. Writer Brad Meltzer said recently that no one is embracing and teaching history to the mainstream like he is. He's got a good case. His television shows, Lost History and Decoded, are all about history. His children's book series, I Am, introduces kids to American icons. And then there are his novels, steeped in history. Every one, his latest, The President's Shadow, is no different. And Brad Meltzer, my old friend, joins us now. Brad, welcome.
Emphasis on the old.
We are getting old, aren't we?
I refuse to believe that, but I'm just glad that I have friends like you. That's all I care about.
So this is the first, this is sort of where you made your hay, right, with these thriller novels, and you got away from them for a while, but you're back at it now. How's it feel to be back at it?
I mean, listen, the funny part is I never left it because as I was doing everything else, I was really working on the thrillers. It just takes me 2 years to do each one. So I love being back. I love doing the TV show. I love doing our kids' books. But the thrillers are the house that I build with my own hands.
I've seen that quote from you. What does that mean? The thrillers are the house you've built with your own hands.
Yeah, because it's just, I'll say it even a different way. My agent once said to me that when you paint your own house, it's like making love to your house. And, you put in the time, you put the energy in. My dad, I remember telling him that. And I was like, isn't that beautiful? My dad says, what the hell does that mean? That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. But what I really mean is, I have an editor who makes sure I don't go over the cliff. But when I do a kid's book, I got to follow Abraham Lincoln's story. When I do a TV show, we have an entire staff. But when I do the novels beside that editor, it's really, it's just me and a blank page, and I got nothing else.
I want to talk about the characters in this book, Beecher White and others, but you just brought up your dad. And correct me if I'm wrong, but is this your first thriller since... you've lost both of your parents?
Yeah, it's the first one where they were both gone last time, but they had passed as I was already working on the book. But this is the first one, start to finish, my parents aren't there for.
I ask because it seems to have a lot to do with these younger characters identifying or reaching out or trying to find their parents.
Yeah, I wish I was a smart guy that I knew exactly what thematically I was writing about when I started, and I tend to find it when I'm finished. And I saw when I started, this book I was determined was going to help me get over the death of my parents. And what I realized when I finally got to the end is I was like, oh, wait, I'm never supposed to get over the death of my parents. I don't want to get over the death of my parents. If you love someone with your whole heart, you should forever remember them. And I realized I'm so stupid. That's what Beecher's lesson is in this book, but it's also my lesson.
Well, tell me about Beecher White and what he's after in The President's Shadow.
So what happens in chapter one of The President's Shadow opens with a very, very simple moment. It's 3 pages long, and it opens like this. The First Lady is in the White House Rose Garden. And when I meet First Ladies, they always strike me as people who just want normalcy again. They just want their normal life back. And it's 5 o'clock in the morning. Everything's calm. She can finally just be alone. She puts her hands in the dirt. She smells the mulch. And in that moment, out of that calm, from the dirt, she pulls a severed arm. And she has no idea how the arm got there. She has no idea how they got past security. She certainly has no idea that in the fist of that arm is a puzzle that she's going to have to solve. But that's where the book opens up. And that's chapter one.
And Beecher White is called in eventually, sort of under a... in a way, in a duplicitous sort of way, that he thinks he's going to get answers about his father, but the president who calls him in isn't necessarily so concerned about that.
Yeah, so I have, the president, what's in his closed hand has to do with Beecher's dad, which makes the case very personal, though, because his dad died when he was just a baby, and he really doesn't know anything about him. And I can tell you that one of the things that I found, I can make up whatever I want, but I immediately took this kind of investigation and I went to the Secret Service. And I basically said to them, if you had this real investigation, what would you do? Mm-hmm. And they said to me, well, the first thing I'd do if I was doing an investigation like this in the White House is I would redecorate a room there. And I said, what are you talking about? And they said, if I redecorate a room in the White House, I can put some paint on the wall or peel some wallpaper off. And if I do that, then I can get the first family out of the house. I can move them out for a couple of days to stay somewhere else. and the press will never understand why or know why, and I'm free to investigate all I want. And I said, it sounds like something that you've done before. And the guy says to me, Brad, think of it this way. Both Bill Clinton and George W. Bush and Barack Obama, all of them, have renovated rooms when they were in the White House. You would not believe what's been done here in the name of home renovation. And I'm like, thank you for chapters 2 and 3 and 4.
So funny that you bring that up, because that was in my notes, because in the novel, I think they make reference to the Obamas going to Camp David or something for redecorating. So that's something that actually truly has happened.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, sometimes a redecoration is a redecoration, but sometimes it's not. And as you said, you know, and when he finds out that it's related back to his father, I can tell you, when my dad died, my dad was struck by lightning, and his father, my grandfather, was also struck by lightning. And I knew my grandfather was struck by lightning because it was in the Army discharge papers that he had. But when it came to my father being struck by lightning, I honestly was like, is that true, or is that just like some tall tale my dad always told us? But my dad died, and I never knew, but in his eulogy, I told that story. And about a month later, some guy comes through my website and basically says, Dear Brad, I read the eulogy about your father. I saw he died, and I know you said that you were questioning whether the story was true about him being struck by lightning. I'm here to tell you that I can tell you it's true because I was there with him on the day he was struck.
Wow.
And Steve, on that day, this stranger became the most important man in the universe because he had information about my dead father. And that's where that scene in the book comes from. That's where Beatrice suddenly finds that curiosity.
And he wants to find out more about how his father and how his father died. So you're all about history, as I said at the beginning. You bring us to Devil's Island and Dr. Samuel Mudd. Some of the conspirators in the Lincoln assassination were brought to this island. I think Mudd, isn't he distantly related to Roger Mudd, the television newsman?
He is. That's why he gets pardoned years later. Is because of Roger Mudd uses his influence to make sure to give his relative's good name a little less sullied. But I was fascinated by this part, Abraham Lincoln's murder. And we all know John Wilkes Booth shot Abraham Lincoln. But what people forget is there were 8 other co-conspirators who were convicted of the crime. Now, 4 of them were hanged. The other 4 of them, including Dr. Samuel Mudd, were given life in prison. They were supposed to go to New York, south from you guys. But they were supposed to go from Washington, D.C. up to New York. And here's what really happened to them, and this is true, is in the middle of the night, they're all pulled from their jail cells. They don't go north to New York. They actually go south on a boat. They're put on a boat, and they go south. And they go past Miami, past Key West. Now, there's nothing else left in the United States except for the fact that back then it was a secret. Now it's well known. But there was a secret island that still exists to this very day. It was called Devil's Island, also known as Fort Jefferson, also known as the Dry Tortugas. And on this island is where Abraham Lincoln's killers, their secret prison was. And I was like, I got to go there. So, of course, like any good history nerd, I went there. And I won't ruin it, but the last 100 pages of The President's Shadow take place on this island, and you'll see the jail cell, you'll see what happened to them, and you'll see what happened to Abraham Lincoln's killers. What I was obsessed with is that Samuel Mudd went to the island as a killer and as a hated man, one of the most hated in America. But somewhere when he's on that island, there's an outbreak of yellow fever. And because Dr. Samuel Mudd's a doctor, he starts helping people. And on this island, he transforms and becomes a great hero. And I just thematically love that there was a secret island of transformation.
Beecher White is a member of the Culper Ring, which really existed. It's the third novel, as I recall, that you've visited Beecher White in the Culper Ring. But as you mentioned, John Wilkes Booth, a character in this book, Ezra, is trying to resurrect a group called the Knights of the Golden Circle. And he said that Booth and others were in that group. Is that a real group, the Knights of the Golden Circle?
The Knights of the Golden Circle are real. And they were back during the Civil War. They were a group that just wanted to have their own little circle, part of Mexico and part of the United States, where they could just keep slavery alive. They basically were a bunch of racists who just wanted to have their own area to keep slavery going. And what is most amazing to me is there were rumors that Jesse James was in there, that John Wilkes Booth was in there. No one can prove that. I don't know, you know, no one's found any proof on that. But there are people who say that the Knights of the Golden Circle, when the Civil War gold disappeared at the end of the Civil War, when the South basically took all their Confederate gold and sent it down to Atlanta, all of it went missing. And there are people who say that it's the Knights of the Golden Circle who actually have hit it, and that one day the South will rise again.
So you're...
And I was like, I love that story. That's, I was like, I got to use that.
I like that. And, you know, you're very meticulous about this. And one of the reasons I like reading what you do is they're not just thrillers, but they... there's real history to them, and you can sort of rely on whether the president's moved out for redecorating or the Knights of the Golden Circle or whatever. But you were involved in a bit of a dust-up with this one, with Ronald Reagan and his gun. In the novel, there's a passage that says Reagan carried a gun in his briefcase, and so, you know, people read that. They went to the Secret Service and said, well, no, that never really happened. I want to tell me a little bit about what's going on there.
I mean, the truth is, if you really look at it, again, I will never, ever doubt my sources. And in fact, if you look at the other articles that have come out of it, there's a Reagan biographer who says Meltzer's right, and there's Achievement names a Secret Service agent who confirms it. And listen, there's always going to be a staffer who you can find who says, I never saw that there was a gun there. But I can tell you, I have no reason at all to doubt my sources in the Secret Service. And I was talking to people who specialize in their history. So I'm telling you, Reagan had this gun, and even since it came out, even more sources have confirmed it separate than mine.
So you're sticking with that?
Oh, yeah. Listen, I have no reason to doubt my guys. These guys have been with me for a long time, and I trust them, and they give me good people inside the service.
It must be, as a reader, you know, and I guess maybe this has sort of been the subtext for this interview, as a reader, we don't always, you know, you're writing fiction, so... most of what you're writing is fiction, but some of it is fact, and, you know, and it's hard sometimes. Or how would you direct your reader to know what is fact and what is part of the fictitious story?
You know, the truth is, honestly, I don't think any of it matters what's real, because you're reading fiction. That's why you read it.
Right.
But I will say the number one question we get is, hey, Brad, tell me what's real. People want to know. They just want to know what the fun parts are. So we actually do put on our website, and we do, you know, blog posts here and there. And we have affected an edition of this one where we put a little thing in the back to show you, here's the real facts that are real from Devil's Island, and here's the real things from the Secret Service. And when they're real, I never hesitate. I tell people exactly where I got it from, and that's the fun of it. But I think people, or at least I can speak for myself, I love reading a book where while you're reading, you learn something.
Right. Well, and that's I read this book with little tears in the pages and pen notes. I'm like, I'm going to ask them if this is real, or this is interesting. Did this really happen? And, you know, you're right. So it's kind of on a couple levels. It's a thriller, but it's a history lesson too.
Yeah. And then that's how, why is that? Because that's what I like. I can make up whatever I want. I can say that there are secret tunnels that run below the White House and they go all the way to Disney World, and there's nothing anyone can really say because I'm making it up.
Right.
But if I tell you that there is a hidden tunnel below the White House, and if you go down from the room where they store the chairs for the state dinners, and you go out the back of that room, and you'll smell flowers in the air because you're right by the White House flower shop, and the ceiling's going to lower down, and you're going to feel vent ducts and AC ducts coming down from above you, and if you hit a dead end, you make a right-hand turn, you'll see a steel door, and that's where the real hidden tunnel is below the White House. It's really a bomb shelter. Now you go, wait a minute, something's real here.
And
now my fictitious plot takes on an air of authenticity.
All right, so let's talk about 90th birthday parties, because you were at one of note earlier this summer.
This was last week. I was at Barbara Bush's 90th birthday party. What she did is she turned it into a charity event for Democrats and Republicans to raise money for literacy, and for a great cause, and they invited four authors to entertain, and I was one of the ones invited. And I can tell you, it was one of those moments where it was completely surreal, because there's George Bush and Barbara Bush, there's Laura Bush and W, there's Jeb Bush, and, you know, my wife turned to me and was like, at what point in your life did your life become Forrest Gump?
Well, because you're tight with the older Bush, aren't you, with the president?
Well, Bush Sr. is just, you know, I can't say, you know, it's not like we're making buddy cop films, but he's just been very kind to me and has answered questions for some of my thrillers, the past, I think, four thrillers. And it's, you know, it's become this, you know, I appreciate that, you know, someone who once sat in the White House is willing to talk to someone who basically writes fiction for a living. And that's really fun to me.
Well, the latest fiction is The President's Shadow. I don't know how many times we've talked, Brad, but I enjoy it every time. And it's just great to talk to you again. And I wish you well.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Steve Bertrand on Books.